Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Voices of Hope. We have a special treat this week. Pastor Russ is joining us on the podcast to talk a little bit about Easter and his experience entering into ministry, being a pastor, and what that all means to him and his life and ministry. And so we'll get right to it. Friends, enjoy the conversation. Well, Russ, thank you for joining us on Voices of Hope. And I'm sure a lot of people want to hear from you and hear all kinds of stuff from you. And so you have to be a pastor for all people, right? Yeah. Know all things, do all things.
And people hear from me on a regular basis.
So I think we wanted to get together and talk. Easter's coming up.
Yeah.
This will be released Easter week, so Easter's all about resurrection, new life, becoming something new, new creation. Tell us, what are some of the things happening at New Hope that's new, or some of the cool things you're seeing that feels like this kind of a resurrection feel, that there's some excitement about it here at New Hope, and what makes you excited?
Yeah, I love that way you phrased it, because sometimes we think of programs in churches like straight lines on a graph. They keep going up and to the right as if it's steady and straight, when in fact, I think if in anything Easter talks about is the cycles, and that some things go and there's seasons, and some things are dying and other things are being raised again and finding new life. And there's a couple things that I think are particularly exciting. I would talk about our children's ministry, which is moving into a different season, as we just hired a new director of children and family ministries, because the past one deserted us and just became the associate minister.
So I'm out of here. Good luck.
The other ones, I think what we're doing is life groups. That has gone through a season that people hung on, and the ones that were there were great. But to provide more opportunities for people, I think that's one of the great needs in the community, is to be community. And I don't mean just churched, but people come here still. There's a number of people who are coming. This is new, and they don't have anybody. And this can be a very lonely place around here. And to be able to reach into a community and have some people for whom they become some of your deepest and dearest friends over time, and I think it's powerful. And so that can be sort of that same cycle in people's lives as they've moved here and are been here, and they're looking for something new. I'm thinking of mission. I was just at a lunch today talking about something really exciting having to do with a new mission group around the crisis center for people, for families that have experienced violence. And that is moving into its own new phase. And it's very exciting to hear some of the things that they're thinking about and the ways that they've reconfigured themselves. So all of those are just ways of talking about cycles. Those are all ways of talking about new life. And all of those are talking about, at the core of it all, what Easter does is not only give a template, but it also says it matters. What we do matters. There's things that last and that are part of the life that has no end, that death can't touch. And so it can go in and out of seasons, but whatever it is that we're doing or not doing, it in the end, it matters.
So New Hope's kind of been through a lot in the last couple of years. And so those are the things you're seeing that are good seeds of resurrection and excitement for people who are here, right?
Yeah.
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 When did you start ministry? When did you start to feel that call into ministry? Because you could tell us all the things you're excited about now. But some people don't even know the background of kind of what's the passion that brought you into ministry?
Yeah, good question, because you know there's those stories of the people who from age 5 knew that they were going to be a minister. That wasn't me. The last thing I wanted to do in high school and in college was be a minister. That had zero appeal to me. And it wasn't so much ministry as so much as the church. And there was, in my own journey, a death and resurrection had to take place with my own understanding of what the church can be and could be. I was raised in the church, knew everything about church. I was a church kid. Church kids know all kinds of things, sometimes what their parents and adults don't want them to know. There's some ups and downs to that. And what I experienced in my home church, it was in the 60s, and it was around civil rights, and it just tore my church apart. And I saw adults who would talk and present themselves in worship in one way and then fight all the way to the car. And it felt like we're just playing games here. And this was a place that was doing more damage than it was doing good. So in my teen years and even early college years, I left the church because it felt like it was not only irrelevant, but hurtful. Now, alongside of that, I was doing, and I found out that I really liked doing some of the things that we would call ministry. As I came to a different understanding of my own faith and what I wanted to, I came back and wanted to learn more, so I started to teach. I taught a Sunday school class. I taught a Bible study, and I loved that. I loved seeing the lights turn on. I loved the exploration for myself, but I still didn't like the church. So I came out of college. I went in as an engineering major. I came out as a psych major. And what I thought I would probably like to do most of all was teach and high school coach, probably basketball. That was my sport of choice. And maybe go into counseling. So it was really backing in. And even as I was in seminary, as I stepped into seminary, I still wasn't sure. It was really for the exploration of the knowledge that whatever I did, I thought this could be useful. But I never really saw myself in the church. My first church that I was at, as I was working and a position opened, I took it, and then as they created an assistant pastor for me back then, I remember the day that they announced I had this job, and it was also during the time we were taking a photo directory, and they said, "Oh, you're a minister, you're one on staff here, you need to take a staff picture." I was okay with that. "You're a minister, so you need to have one with a robe." And I just remember this shudder that worked through my body. It was like, oh no, I don't have a robe. I don't want a robe. And the associate pastor who was there, who is one of my best friends to this day, said, "Here, you can borrow mine." And I put it on, and I viscerally shuddered. I felt like, oh no, I have sold out. I've gone to the dark side. I am now one of those guys. Because in my mind, churches as a whole, still, I wasn't convinced about them. They felt that there were aspects that were good, but oh, there were some things that were really painful. And ministers were the guys who were kind of in charge of this big religious game going on.
So it felt like you're kind of like part of the system.
I had sold out. Yeah, I had done it.
You're so, working for the man.
So
you are the man.
Even through the first 8 years of ministry, I wasn't sure I wanted to be a minister. Uh-huh. Because I didn't. I loved what I was doing with youth and adults and teaching. When I got to preach once in a while, that was cool. But it was this entity called the church, and it was this position that really turned me off. And I had this love-hate relationship. And it really wasn't until I moved to Central Washington and was a solo pastor of a church that I fell in love with the idea of the church, the local church, and understood what it meant to be a minister in a way that became very invigorating. There wasn't a lot of programs to push. It was people and people of all ages. And I got to appreciate how this role, you get to step into some very sacred and holy places in people's lives, with whether it's birth, whether it's death, whether it's celebrations, anniversaries, graduations, baptisms, confirmation, weddings. It was just incredible, all the different places that the church intersects in people's lives. And then I got it. When the church is functioning well, there's nothing like it. And it's really about 8 years, 9 years into being a minister that I decided, yeah, this is what I'm supposed to do. So this was not a straight line for me either. And I had to relearn and unlearn a lot of things that I had thought I knew about the church in order for that to make that viable for me.
If you could, we've talked about elevator speeches before. Yeah. If you,
oh, fine, put me on the spot.
If you had to give an elevator speech of what your personal mission and ministry is, what would that be?
Here's the first thing that comes to my mind. It's an extension of the first question of the Shorter Catechism, and I hope it's a long elevator ride. What's the purpose?
When you bring the catechism, then what's probably the, it should be.
Yeah. Well, so let me get to that, and then I'll expand on it. So what's the purpose of life? What's the whole point of this? And their answer, the short answer, is to glorify and enjoy God forever. And when I remember when that came across my radar, lights went on and windows flew open, and my life had a whole different orientation and direction. And what I see myself in ministry is to help do that, is to be transparent enough to what God is doing and showing me so that other people, the lights turn on for them as well. In terms of church, what I do is try to make this place, this container, if you will, sufficient for the content. The container is the church, the programs, the buildings, the program, all those kinds of things. Those are all good, but to make them sufficient so that God can work in and through them, the content can hold and then dispense that same content into people's lives and into the community. I think that got me to the 23rd floor. So as long as we got that, I'm there.
Empire State Building.
Oh, I've got a couple minutes left to go then. Good.
So out of all that stuff, what makes New Hope special to you, and why? Because it's becoming more, you see it more often. It used to be really rare, and it still is pretty rare that somebody like you stays at a church for, was it 22 years now?
22 years, yeah.
Are they just not letting you go? Like, what's
what's behind this question, Warnches? What are you hearing?
So what makes New Hope special that you thought, this is where I want to be, and that hasn't changed? Like, what about this place?
So when I came here, I was happy in Central Washington, loved that church, but didn't sense that was going to be a long-term kind of a place for me. I had come to believe in the validity and the importance of long-term pastorates. And you're right, that's changed over the years. It used to be that ministers would move on a regular basis. And in part, that was because it was to help balance that communities were very stable and stayed. And so one way to keep things alive and moving was to then therefore rotate the people in the church. And there was a time and a place when there's 3 and 4 or 5 generations in the same church. That's not the case anymore. In fact, communities now are in constant churn, and certainly Douglas County is especially so. So it makes more sense for some stability and to stick around and then to have some life and do life with people over a series of years. And I really dug that idea, and I still do. Now, it doesn't always make sense, and hopefully if it comes and becomes clear that this doesn't make sense anymore, then obviously I would hope I would have the sense to leave before that. But so far, it just keeps making sense. And the thing that I like about New Hope is several things. One is this is a community and a church that keeps changing. The community has changed and grown. The church has changed and grown. It's gone through different life cycles. And it's just interesting to me. It's almost like waking up every day to a puzzle. And what part of the puzzle do you want to work on today? And it's always new and exciting. Mm-hmm. The other part, though, is I love what's going on here, and I like the people that are here, and I love the spirit of this place. I love how people want to make a difference in the world, and they want church to be more than just a Sunday activity or something that's relevant to an address on a corner in a particular time and place, that the people here are really looking for and resonate with doing something that makes a difference in the community and in the world. And so this is really just a fun place to be, and I love hanging out with this group of people in this time and in this particular situation.
Well, do you think that, especially the last couple of years, we're seeing the community change faster and faster?
Yeah. So when I first got here, Douglas County and Castle Rock in particular were starting to move very quickly. Mm-hmm. Then in 2008, right after we finished our sanctuary in their second edition, that is when the recession hit. And so it just kind of put everything into a freeze. And more than that, around here, there was foreclosures and people were leaving. And so the church served a different function at that point. But now, in the last several years, that has thawed since 12, 13. And now it's starting to pick up speed. And now there's a whole different challenge here of a community that once again is coming in. and if not at chaotic rates, pretty fast. And so it's an interesting, how are we to be a church for this community that's here as well as the people who aren't here yet? And how do we have relevance there, and how do we connect? I think it's a very vital thing. It's a different issue than what we were dealing with 10 years ago. But that's part of the unique challenge of 2018.
It is a unique challenge. it's one that we've talked about a lot, that it's and the future of the church too, and just not, I think one of our recent conversations had to do with this, everything happening right now in the world in terms of technology and stuff is a much different environment than the church has ever faced. The church was able to rely upon family and generations to keep a church going. Like you said, stable communities where the people were the ones that were stable. But now we're more transient, and there's also more things available to us than ever, whether it's technology or go up to the mountains or into Denver for a show or something like that, that now church is in this mode of, what's the next step in church? How do we become the church in the 21st century? And that's hard. It's 21st century, right?
It is. Yeah. Last I checked. Lots has changed. I hope we haven't lost that one already. Man, am I behind.
So, and that's a hard thing to do.
Right? Not only the time, but the situation. So the issue that is here in 2018 is different than if downtown Denver.
Yep.
It's different than in a community with, let's say, a Rust Belt community. Mm-hmm. It's different than in the Southwest. So it's. I think one of the things that has changed is the context of a church is unique to its place in ways where it's always, a suburban church has always been different than a downtown church or a rural church. It is even more so now. It has become its own thing with its own set of rules. And so it demands that people pay attention to the context of their community, which is going to be different than if you even just move 5 miles up the road and you're in Littleton. Mm-hmm. That's going to be different. Certainly if you go to Parker or, you know, anywhere else, it's different here. So it means paying attention in ways where you can assume almost nothing except that what used to work probably won't work anymore. And in fact, some of the things that used to work might get in the way of meeting the needs that are here today. We see that in every other field. So the issue of faith communities, churches, is certainly that's going to be true too. So that in part, that's exciting at that waking up trying to solve the puzzle. And it's a unique puzzle, and it's kind of fun to think about. It's exhausting, and it really does require a certain amount of nimbleness of thinking and faith and trust. And that's one of the reasons I like this place, is there's a lot of people who kind of dig that same challenge and aren't necessarily looking to go back to the church of the 60s or the 50s or the 40s, or even, you know, the church of the early part of this century, way back when. So it's just different. And that's what's kind of fun about it.
Yeah, it's different. And I think one of the things that I've loved about New Hope is it is a group of people that have moved here. They're transplants. Yeah. And New Hope has become their family, and the people here have become family. And I think when you talked earlier about life groups, that's an important place where people can get plugged in and find their family here, because most of us, our families are elsewhere.
Yep.
And to have a place of people to call your own, and not just the wider church, I mean, because we have a lot of members, but to have a smaller group that you meet with and share life with all the time. And so New Hope, I think, is, I don't know if it's unique anymore in that way, because we keep having new people coming to Castle Rock, and people are going to other churches, and just like they find their place. And but it's been unique in my experience, because most of my experience has come from the Midwest, where mm-hmm. people have stayed in their towns for their whole lives.
Yeah, I think there's something different in the vibe of a community when people are there by default. They grew up there. They didn't choose to be there necessarily. That's just where they grew up. That's where they do work. That's where their family is, as opposed to a place where they choose to come. And there's very, very few people in Castle Rock who are here by default. Most people moved here for a reason. They got moved here. They got moved to this area. They chose to live here. And So that has a whole different feel. On the one hand, it's kind of exciting. On the other hand, as you were mentioning, there's a lot of things that are underneath the surface that that don't show up but are there. There is that grief, that free-floating grief I've talked about. Not that people are sad, but there's this sense of loss. They have moved from the Midwest. They've moved from California. They've moved from Oregon. They've moved from wherever where they had their friends, and those friends aren't here. When they call home, it is long distance. When they go on vacation, they go home. And there's a different point of reference about it, what people are willing to invest in a community like this, what they're hoping for, and then what the people that are here can do to help welcome and make this a place that is less and less just a connection of housing developments, but truly a real community. And that only happens face to face, one to one, person to person. That's how that happens. So that's really one of the unique and powerful ministries that's always been part of the church, but especially so today and especially so in Douglas County.
Mm-hmm. What has been the most difficult thing you've gone through in ministry? I got asked this question already.
Yeah?
when I met with, I think the choir, somebody asked me a question. What's the most difficult thing you've had to do already in the position of associate pastor? And I thought that was an interesting question. I don't know if it's one that...
I'd be interested to hear that myself. We're going to flip these microphones around? So I could think of a couple personal things that were incredibly difficult. There was a time when I did a funeral for three people at once that were all killed in the same auto accident, and the only person remaining was probably a 12-year-old girl. And they were fighting for custody of her, but her mom and her sister and brother had all been killed instantly in an auto accident. And I remember that just wiping me out. Those kinds of, there are those kinds of things. I think in terms of every time I move, it is difficult for all the same reasons that everybody's life is difficult when they move. And fortunately, I haven't had to do that too many times. It is an upheaval. Go through the same losses and grief and that everybody else goes through. I think this last period that we went through when we were trying to decide what will we do with same-sex, same-gender weddings, and will we allow that to happen? And the conversation we had was easily some of the most exhausting times in terms of trying to make sure that this was a place where we could have good, honest conversations and try to hold that together or try to create a place where we could hold that together and not lurch from one side to the next. Obviously, we lost a lot of people with the decision we made to offer our facility for that, and that if you're a member, you're a member. We're not going to put an asterisk by your name of certain things you can or can't do, unlike everybody else. We lost quite a few people, and so that was difficult because it's not just numbers. Those are faces. Those are friends. Those are people who are in leadership. Boy, that's a lot of loss. And at the same time, trying to hold the institutional part together because there's also budgets behind that. There's programs, people you have to lay off. There's things you have to cut back, and trying to navigate through all of that without panicking and trying to just be present and trying to be open to what do we sense God trying to do here in the midst of this. Boy, that was an exhausting time. I remember announcing to several people that I believe the next 2 or 3 years is going to be the toughest in my ministry. And it was. It really was. I think we're on the other side of that. That's in the rearview mirror. We've got other challenges. Very important. But, boy, they have a different energy to them. And so I would say that's, there's the personal times, like very, very sad funerals, one thing I've learned about when you stay at a church a long time, you start burying your friends. Mm-hmm. They aren't just people in the congregation. Some of them are very dear friends. And that starts to take its toll. So there's that personal part, but then there's the time in a congregation when it goes through an upheaval like we did that I'm grateful we did, but we paid a price for it. And it just costs a lot to do that. Those are a couple things that would come to mind.
Well, I think on the other side of that, and I've heard you talk about it before, one of the joys of it, though, is that you, unlike a lot of pastors who don't stay as long as you do, you get to baptize someone, and now you get to see them graduate from high school too. Mm-hmm. And so that's a cool. Is that the class that's graduating this year? Is that, I'm sure you've baptized some kids before mm-hmm. this class, but mm-hmm. You get to see them grow up and.
Oh, that is so fun! Are you kidding? Yeah, that is the blast. That is so. That is rich when you get to see families, not only the kids that you baptized, and now they're growing up, and now they're into college and beyond. But also the changes in the families, the generations, and when you get to again be at those key points of meaning and purpose, those sacred holy places in their lives. Certain anniversaries, graduations, weddings, baptisms, funerals. Goodness, that's rich stuff. And that is, in my mind, really one of the great benefits of a long-term pastorate is getting to be involved with people on this long journey, this longer cut, and there's history there. And so then it goes far beyond programs, it goes far beyond just the events. Now you feel like you're really doing life together, and that really is the most gratifying thing.
Yeah. Who are the theologians, spiritual teachers, authors, people that influence you the most?
Couple come to mind. In terms of pastors who are mentors, the first guy I worked for in Los Angeles, his name was Stan Jones. I find myself still drafting off the insights that he had and learnings from him. I think he changed the way I did ministry. I came in as someone who was rather suspicious, institutionally suspicious.
Didn't want to be part of the man.
I didn't want to be part of that. And Stan was one of those who could model what it meant to be involved with and very involved in all the parts that make a church as an institution grow and sustain. But he had this amazing capacity for getting to the stuff of life, and using the church, the programs, and all that to get to the real issues. And they didn't get in the way. He was able to leverage them. I'm still drafting off of him. Another, my best friend is Rich, who I do sermon planning with. We worked together for a year at that church, and he has continued to be an influence as a brother, as a colleague. We have kind of walked through all kinds of things together, and so he continues to be. Theologians, there was a writer who still is alive. His name is Frederick Buechner. His book on preaching while
he's
I was
still alive.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
While he is while I was in seminary, my first sermon, somebody gave me his book on preaching, and I made the mistake of reading it the night before. And because I got reading it, I had to go tear up my sermon and start all over again. And he just had a way of talking and speaking about ministry and paying attention to your life and the grace that comes in the contours and the ups and downs and the everydayness of life that I find still compelling. There was a German theologian who's just thick. His name is Jürgen Moltmann. I have gotten so much from him. I've been challenged so much by him, and just how he understands the work of God and the Trinity and the work of the Spirit. It just continues to challenge and stretch me and grow me. And then recently, Richard Rohr and some of the people in the contemplative side of the church equation have meant a lot. They've up grounding and opening up a whole different side of me and life that I kind of knew was there. I just didn't think it had my name on it. I never thought I'd be a mystic, never thought I'd be a contemplative. I'm not a mystic. I'm not sure I'm a contemplative, but I have come to appreciate the vistas and the insights from that whole segment of the church. And so that one informs me as much as any.
Mm-hmm. Easter's coming up. And
when?
Gosh.
Wait, is that happening again?
It's coming too soon.
Huh.
On April Fool's. Which is wonderful in so many ways.
It's true.
Give us a sneak peek of Easter, if you can.
Yeah.
Of what you feel like, you know, God's kind of laying on your heart to share. And
yeah.
How Easter every year influences our lives and how we should live into it.
Yeah. So I'll go back to the Easter thing, that underlying Easter is it all matters, that none of it's lost. Even the stuff that seems like it has died or has gone away. And Easter is a tough holiday in that it doesn't have the emotional connection like Christmas. Everybody leans into Christmas. Everybody loves Christmas. It's got great food. It's got great music. It's got great all the things that build up to it. It's got great warmth and sentimentality. Easter just shows up and it keeps moving around. And this year, it's like you said, it's on April Fool's. You know, and what do we got? We got bunnies and we got eggs and we got chocolate and great, but that doesn't exactly grab people. So part of it is to say, here's the most important day of the year. It's Easter. It's resurrection. And because of that, everything changes. And yet it's easy to blow by. It's easy to get past. It's hard to put words around. And so that's always a challenge. And for me this year, what has struck me was actually that's not the first resurrection story. You have to back up a couple chapters in the book of John and Jesus' friend Lazarus, who died. And Jesus raised him from the dead. So that really is the first Easter. And it also means that resurrection is happening all around us all the time. We live in that era. And I was just struck by that. So what? So you live again, or so all that happens. If it's just a rumor, if it's just an event on the calendar, if it's just one more cycle after spring break, if we do all the lilies and we do all the music, and if it doesn't have to do with my life and what is being resurrected again in my life, then it's just an interesting date on the calendar, but it doesn't really grab me. And the Lazarus story is, it talks about, what does it mean to grab me? And I'm particularly struck by that as Lazarus comes out, one of Jesus's last comments is, somebody help him out of those grave clothes. He's all wrapped up. And it was two things. One is, you're raised from the dead, but there's still some unbinding to do. It is still possible in that story to not be ready to get on with what that life means. And the second part is, he needed other people to help him do that. And I find both of those things kind of compelling this year. So we're actually going to use a video and a music piece by a group called Bird Talker called Shake Your Grave Clothes Off. And I'm looking forward to that. It's got a great song, great vibe, some really profound words in the midst of it. And it gets to what I think is fairly compelling about, so it's Easter, so what? What does this look like on the other side? And it has to do in some ways of taking off all the things that still cling to us from an old life. A life of despair and regrets and resentment and that don't fit anymore for the new. So that's what I'm looking forward to, and see if we can make all that work.
Yeah. Well, good. Do you feel good about everything? Is there something we didn't talk about that you want to talk about? Burning desire to.
No burning desire. This was fun, and you know, we come back some other time and do another one when you can't get anybody else to do it. I'll sit in again, right, and be one of those reliable guests who can show up on the fly. No, this has been fun. I've enjoyed doing this, and I love hearing the stories that you've covered so far. I'm looking forward to the rest.
Yeah, there's some good ones coming up, and you'll be the kickoff for the second wave of interviews coming.
Cool.
So thanks, and people can come to Easter on Easter services at 8, 9:30, and 11.
Yeah, not to mention the 6 o'clock where you are at Daniels Park.
If it doesn't snow.
At Daniels Park. Well, even there, we've done it in the snow.
Well, yeah. But remember that one year it was too muddy.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had to cancel it once or twice.
Yeah, and so then we can come check it out, hear more about what Russ has to say about the grave clothes and Lazarus and our own resurrections. All right, thanks, Russ.
Hey, thanks, Jordan.